We were talking about the events that occurred after the shooting of Henry Merrill, Benjamin Chavis, and the community activism that went on. And you were saying that you did attend the meetings. What were those meetings like?
The meetings was, the meetings was fine, and good things came out of it. But the factions, you had two faction groups. You had one that wanted to sit down and compromise and talk to white people, and it goes back to what I always think: if you're white, you're right. You understand? We'll give you this. We'll work things out. We apologize. He's one of the low class poor whites that you don't worry about. You understand? You got that in every class. So he was one of the poor whites that made a mistake. Forgive him. You'll never have it no more. And that was a mistake. And you had blacks that believed that, understood that, and say, yeah, it was. He one of those that bad apples in the barrel. And I could understand that. But he had taken a man's life that had just went there, fought for our country. You take a man that been to Vietnam trying to help save his country. He come home and then nobody want to give you anything, appreciate what you had done. And you got a wife and two babies, and here come a white man kill you too. And you've been fighting for his country. What the hell you think is like?
Right. So the other faction didn't want to compromise.
We didn't want to compromise.
Right. So what did y'all decide to do?
We decided to take matters in our own hand, do what we want to do.
And what did y'all want to do?
We wanted to let them know that how it felt. We had feelings, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you take it out on anybody, you know.
So, what kind of things did you guys decide to do exactly?
Well, it's things that you have to bring to their attention. They talk about their Get Your Reparation. You had a good neighbors group, and they go downtown, and they talk to the white people. And what you want, we'll do it for you. But if we would march on Sundays and protest on Sundays, and country people would come in march, and we would go to the courthouse and have different speakers and things like that. And they didn't want you to keep a lot of noise. The crowd got to be larger and larger than what they thought on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And it just got out of hand. Mm.
Was there more rioting?
It was more everything. But see, because you didn't know who to trust. Mm-hmm. One group saying, we're going to do this. Another group say do this, and then you got another group to say you shouldn't be doing, you know, like my mother, you know, and her friends, you know, they didn't support none of it.
Right. So they weren't. They
thought all was wrong.
Right, right. So she didn't even go to the meetings or anything.
She won't, you know, she liked white people, you know, and, you know, you was messing with her white people. Mm-hmm. You know, those people working those kitchen, those maids and stuff, they weren't going to dare.
So would you say that the difference between the factions, I know we've talked a little bit about this before, had to do with class, education, mm-hmm. youth versus age. Mm-hmm. So your group was comprised mostly of what? What kind of people?
Oh, more street people. More people had been in New York, had moved around. Oh, we did have one advantage we had that you take those good neighbor groups and people like that was trying to work problems out. Their weakness was that they didn't tap it. See, by going to the military, they teach you strategy. You always had a plan. Our plan was we wanted to know how weak white people, how disturbing, how was we getting to them, or was it working effective by marching and keeping noise and looting. Well, we had those kind of people that worked in those kitchens would tell us. Mm-hmm. See, my mother wouldn't tell us they were discussing what was going on.
But you would hear from other people.
We were hearing from other people.
And what were they telling you? Was it getting to them?
We was worrying them to death. It was getting to them, and that's all they wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. And not to them. They would listen to talk to their friends and their children and what meetings and what they discussed and what things they thought should happen and what should not.
Hmm. So, have you heard of, you read Tim Tyson's paper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he talks about the pool hall crew. Mm-hmm. Is this what you're talking about?
Well, yeah.
So you were a member of that?
Well, we ran a pool hall. My father and my brother worked all the time there, mm-hmm. you know, and I was working there when I wanted, yeah.
Okay. So the things that that the Pooja crew did, like the bombings and that type of thing, you were involved in?
Well, see, you don't work. We didn't work much. So we had time.
Right.
To do what, you know, decide what we want to do.
So you went and you did it.
It was done.
What was done?
Well, you know, you express your feelings, you know.
Okay. So, you had to leave Oxford after that?
Well, they put a curfew on. They had the National Guards here. You had to be in at 6 o'clock, and white church were playing, and they was doing what they wanted. We couldn't, and they was mad because you burnt half the town down. You beat up white people, pull them out of cars if they come in a black section, and stuff like that. And so it was getting where you had to leave town, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you the only one that left town, or did a lot of people?
A lot of us left town. Yeah, a lot of people left town.
So you left in about June 1970?
I went to Raw and started working.
How long were you there?
A couple of years, then I went to Delaware.
Delaware?
Wilmington, Delaware, and worked. I had a business up there with a guy.
What kind of business?
Oh, car cleaning business. I started in Raw. Went to Raw, I worked for the city of Raw as an inspector. I didn't like working for nobody. I had just come from, you know, over here and, you know, you got tired of people taking advantage of you, you know, stuff like that.
So you worked in Raleigh for a little while, then you went to Wilmington, Delaware, and started your own business?
Yeah.
Was this the first time you started your own business?
No, second time.
Second time. What was the first time?
I started in Raleigh.
Oh, you started it in Raleigh.
Yeah.
What kind of business was that?
A car cleaning business.
Same
with
kind
another
of business.
Guy. Yeah.
I see. What made you guys decide to move to Delaware?
I got tired, it was too much work, and I met a salesman, told me he had a guy up there that needed a partner, and I was single, and I wanted to make more money, and I thought it was better than I did, but then I got up there, that guy, he got where he didn't want to work and make a lot of money, so I saved my money, came back, and went into the John Trump business in 74. Mm-hmm.
And that's when you returned to Oxford?
Mm-hmm. I started in Raleigh.
Right.
Went back to Raleigh.
So, you went back to Raleigh from
Delaware. Cleaning, yeah.
And started your janitorial business
right.
there.
Right, I stayed there for a year.
And you stayed for a year. So, when did you return to Oxford?
In 74.
What made you come back after all that time?
Things had gotten bad. White people had taken the town back over again.
Hmm.
Black people had given up.
Hmm.
I was running around with friends writing grants. You was getting money for recreation. You getting money for different programs, for food programs. And it was a lot of money out there, a lot of federal money out there. Nobody would write grants and nobody would try to get these people nothing. And they had gone back in the same old hole they was in before. You dig them out, you get them out of it, and you leave. Hell, you come back, they done let the white people take them back over again.
Hmm.
Eating out their hands and like feeding them like they're pigeons and stuff like that.
So after all that had happened, not much had changed.
Not much changed, you know. You got wasted time. So when I came back in 74, I was ready then.
So what did you do?
Just did everything I wanted to do.
Like what, for example?
Well, went in the NAACP and took that over and got to be the president there. And then that was it then.
Oh, you became president of the local chapter?
Yeah.
Oh, what kind of things did you guys do?
What things that I did, I was doing what the organization call for what to do.
Such as?
Demonstration, monitor your schools, find out what was, you know, doing surveys and different things like that. Current on workshops, make sure you had activities going on. Monitor the city board, the county boards, and were you getting what you was entitled to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't have no good black people because you was going against the grain.
Right.
But I was doing what the organization said. That's how I got to be president.
Right, right. So what years were you president?
Off and on. I was president one time for 12 years.
Between what year? Starting when?
It must have been about 72. Because when I went on the city board and got elected in 77, they was going to tell me that you couldn't. They told me you couldn't be in the NAACP and be on the city board.
Who told you that?
White people.
Oh.
And then they told the blacks that too.
Really?
And they told me I couldn't be I was gonna have to get out the NAACP.
So did you?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Them people's crazy. I don't get out of nothing.
So you joined the NAACP in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
You became president in what year?
I don't know, it must have been about 74.
74?
75.
And you served for 12 years after that?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, long, yeah. And then they found out what I was doing was right. It worked. And then the organization got bigger. But I still had those street people that you connected with where I left here, you know, that came back again. And then that's when I really had a plan then. And then we started getting factual organizations. And then in the town, you always need 3 or 4 organizations when you live in a southern town. You need that kind to please the white people. You need that kind to please everybody. You need that group that don't please no daggone by, don't give a damn about nobody. Do what you want to do. And then you have a group to stand up and fight for different people's social service. I was with that group. We fought for different things that people's entitled to.
Right, right. Oh, that's an interesting theory there.
Yeah. You always have you need that.
Mm-hmm. So you came back and you got politically active, basically.
Yeah, I had a clothing store.
You had a clothing store?
Yeah.
Another business.
Yeah.
Yeah, your business.
Selling wigs and everything.
Political activist. Were you working with some of the same guys that you were working with before you left town?
Yeah, and I picked up some new ones. I got hooked up with ladies. I convinced ladies and girls that they need to be involved mm-hmm. and stay involved.
Hmm. So you were pretty successful at that?
Yeah. They would believe me because they had worked with me previous. But they came in this time, they really found out I was going to stay here. And what they needed was somebody going to live here and have leadership.
Mm-hmm. And so in 1977, you decided to run for office.
Yes.
How did you decide to run?
I fooled the black people. They thought blacks couldn't win. And blacks had ran. They ran these school teachers and professional people, stuff like that. And I tricked them into coming down that vote. Tricked them into coming down and I told them that told them that I could win if they would do this and do that. But they had to do it, and they didn't believe it.
But they did it.
They did it.
And you won.
And I won.
And you were serving on the city board.
Yeah, I had those street people. See, I had all them pool of guys. I went in. See, the reason they wasn't winning, they didn't know the secret. Is our weakness with black people is they think that the church got all the people. Right now, if you send me out here, it's more people that don't go to church that go to church. Am I right?
It's been my experience.
All right.
I wasn't so sure about the towns, though. So it's the same way?
So who would you reach? So you go where the people that you go. See, those people never register. They never. See, if you got 500 people walking around out here never registered, never voted, they ain't seen no black. How could you tell them you could elect a black? It made sense. They didn't vote. Mm-hmm. So these professional people never went to those people and told them to vote for them and registered them and told them they could get elected and what they could do for them.
So you went to the people?
So I went to those people.
Hmm, that's good.
I convinced those people. Mm-hmm. And that's how I won, by 14 votes. Hmm,
by 14 votes?
And I beat the man that owned the newspaper.
Mm, he must have been pretty mad.
He had all of them was mad as hell. Here, how could the man that had access to the media would lose? I tricked them street people into. I told them, you register and you can vote, I can win. And see, those professional people thought I won because they couldn't count the votes. Mm-hmm. They could count themselves, but they couldn't count the street people because they never got.
They couldn't figure out who would vote for
it. They couldn't figure out who would vote for them. Mm-hmm. And I taught them, and see, down there, you may vote for 3. You might vote for 4. If you do that, you're not helping me.
Right, so
I
could
vote for 1.
Person.
But see, you could tell the street people to vote for 1, but them white, them these uppity blacks and people that have been around, he don't tell me to vote for. I vote for who I want. You can vote for 3, I'm going to vote for 3. But every time you give him a vote, you give me 1, you're not helping me.
Right.
So those street people knew to vote for 1.
Right.
Because I had people at the poll. They knew 1 name. They couldn't go in there reading all them names. You give them a slip, you know.
Right.
So they knew what happened. And then when they start counting up at night, when it's a McCoy, 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 they go like that, see? They say somebody sang a shot. So I knew that, see? So they call it a single shot, mm. Not fast.
Right.
And they want to hire those people. Who was those people voting like that?
So how long, how many times did you run for that particular office?
Two times. I served 8 years.
So you served 8 years, so each time is 4 years.
Yeah, and then Uncle Tom, blacks got, had to get rid of me. Mm. White people made them get rid of me.
Did they? So you served from 77 to 85.
Yeah.
And Uncle Tom, blacks got rid of me. Yeah. How did they do that?
White man told me I need to go. They need to come on in and take over because I wasn't qualified. They needed qualified blacks down there.
So they ran one of their own.
They ran on their own. You're right. Here I am, self-employed. And that's who you need. And he tricked them into getting them people to work for them and go to them banks and borrow money from them. They wanted control. Mm-hmm. But in 1970, another good thing we did for blacks here, we did not have no blacks that worked at the poll. Mm-hmm. No polling place. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things Ben and all us asked for. Mm-hmm. And the whites wouldn't even give them to them. And we raised so much hell when they found out that every hell broke loose. And that's one of the things that the street people wanted. We asked, the things that we asked for was different than the one, the good neighbors and so-called representatives.
So you guys did accomplish that.
We got that, and, right. guess who worked the poll was the poll worker. Go back to them old school teachers, all them professors. See who?
You guys worked.
We stuck our neck out, and
but they worked the poll.
That's right.
Right. Yeah, that sounds.
The cool. White man always got an angle. See, yeah. He's saying, "All right, Dad, we gonna give on you, but we still gonna pick the chief."
Right. So is that pretty much how it has been since?
Yeah, well, see, them professional people didn't know nothing about being poll workers. They didn't know that was significant. They didn't know that that meant anything, mm-hmm. working in the polls and working in that. You understand?
Right.
They loved that was a position, you know, once they found out white people say.
More authority.
Yeah. And being that we asked for that, they gave it to us.
So tell me a little bit about your 8 years serving on the board. What kind of things did you do?
It was hell. I was up there with Ku Klux Klans and everything. I got a lot of changes. Got swimming pool for blacks, got street paved, got houses rehabilitated, taught them how to apply for grant money. They was writing the grants wrong. They were stupid. These blacks were stupid. These whites was writing the grants and they weren't checking them, doing follow-ups. And they were making errors and wasn't putting them in on time and writing them right. I made them high grant writers. Mm. And like have people grant people that.
Oh, so you hired grant writers.
Yeah, right. I told them we hired grant writers. I said they said they ain't got the money. I said write the grant. We hire somebody to look the grants over. This is they're written right. The proposals are right, mm-hmm. and they agreed on that.
That was smart. So who told you? I mean, you. This is Eddie. You tell me you're the one that got put in the back of the class, and you never thought you were smart. But how did you know? How did you learn about grant writing?
That's common sense. I ran around with friends that did that in Raleigh. That's how they paid their house payments and stuff like that. I always ran with guys that knew how to beat the system.
So you picked it up?
Picked it up. They was over there writing grants for everybody. And I asked them, I said, man, how y'all? They was working for these different public, these agents. These agents that helped the widows, helped the old people, senior citizens with wood, and helped them with their how to read, how you pay your rent, you know, different assistance. They was entitled to going to social service and stuff like that. And they was working, doing that type of work, and they got paid per mileage. And what they would do is they'd send one person work a district, and they when they save gas and rotate it. And at the end of the month, their mileage fee was their house payment. They had that much money.
Really?
Uh-huh. Hmm. I ran around with people like that. And that my friend was a funeral home worker. You know, I'd worked a funeral home, so I met this guy, and he was a funeral home director around him, and that's how most of those guys worked for City of Raleigh, worked for, had them government agent jobs. And I came over here, and I knew about that.
Hmm. So you'd acquired a lot of knowledge in your travels.
By moving around, yeah. Been around different people.
So did you enjoy serving on the board?
Yeah, I had a fight. It was tough, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like it was.
They threatened me and stuff like that about what they was going to do and what was going to happen to me.
They would threaten you?
Yeah, and then you had blacks threatening you too, you know.
How would they threaten you? Not at the meetings.
Right? Well, yeah, at the meeting.
What would they say?
So I was telling different things that wasn't supposed to be getting out to the public and different an executive session, things about personnel, different things. And they was trying to put fear in me. It's just saying that I was, James Smith said it, he was tired of everything to be said in executive session. Would be every people in the street would know about it. In executive session, you're not supposed to be discussed out in the street, and his friend Walter Hughes sat between me. He said he agreed to it, and he thought it was wrong too, and wanted to know who was doing it. And so I asked him who was doing it. Jane Smith was sitting near the mayor, and Walter Hughes was next to me, and then I was on the end. And I asked them who they thought was doing it. They said, well, you know who it was doing. I said, who was doing it? Who, me? He said, well, you the only one do all the talking. I said, yeah, I do a lot of talking. Said, that's where it's coming from. I said, look, if you think I don't have enough common sense to discuss, know what to discuss and what to say, then I think we need to do something about it. He said, I think so too. He's a clown. And I said, well, I think we need to shut that person up. He said, I think so too. The mayor said, we don't need to discuss or get into this. I said, mayor, I think we need to sell this. I said, I think if Eddie McCoy is telling it, I think y'all need to stop it. See, it won't no blacks in there. And so I told Walter Hughes, I said, why don't you slide back so James Smith can get to me? Because he got a problem. He going to stop me from telling what goes on Zegna session. And Mayor Kern was saying, well, it's not that. And I don't think it's got to that point of you the one. I said, I think I'm the one. I think we need to stop it. Why don't we stop it?
What did he do?
What did he do? He huffed and he puffed, but he knew he wasn't going to blow this house down.
Right, right. So you did the right thing. You confronted him face to face.
Right.
And Klansmen don't like to do that.
That's right. Mm.
So that happened. That kind of thing happened often?
All the time, yeah.
Really?
They used to do me like, they threatened me, yeah. You see, just to see how much pressure.
Did they call you and threaten you?
Well, yeah, but see, I wasn't married. I ain't had no family. You know, right. I didn't have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. I wasn't working for nobody. So what did I care?
Did your business suffer at all?
I had business out of town, Raleigh, Durham, and Henderson. I had more business out of town than Oxford. I didn't want no business here anyway. It make no difference to me. Still don't have no. I got some here. Most of all my business must have been out of town anyway. Before I got work, before I was in a wreck, I was up as far as Richmond, Virginia.
So they couldn't touch you, really?
They couldn't touch me,
without actually.
Well, my father's self-employed. Yeah. My brother's self-employed. My mother worked for white people because she wanted to. She worked at Bertha Mill. But they couldn't stop us. Mm. We bought what we wanted.
Mm-hmm. Short of actually killing you or something.
Well, yeah, right.
But they didn't go that far, thank goodness. Hmm. So, it sounds like you've accomplished quite a bit for the town of Oxford.
They don't think so.
You don't think people recognize that?
No, they don't. They recognize, they don't admit it.
What about, you know, the fact that you have your name up there on the wall, City Hall? Do the citizens know about that here, the black community?
Or? They know about it.
Yeah? You think they're proud of you?
No.
No?
Uh-uh.
No one ever tells you, no one ever came up to you and thanked you for doing what you
did? Not but street people.
Yeah. No one else?
No, professional people don't like that.
They never came up to you and thanked you for doing what you did?
No, professional people, see, because they had a chance. Mm-hmm. And they went about the professional way. And they thought that's the way you get to be success when you're working out in civil rights and working to help people and working for people. So I always worked for street people. We had a food project one time. What happened was that the government came out feeding children. They wanted to know what happened to kids. And this was a good program. We had fun with it, but that was, it must have been in 81 or 82. They came out with a program. They did a study on black kids and inner city kids after they did school closed. How was they going to eat? And so what the government did was gave food to any area they wanted to run a food program, a system program. They would feed children through the summer. So by us having public housing, we used the kitchen, the churches and stuff like that. And a friend of mine named Barbara Harris, she was smart. She did the paperwork.
Barbara Harris?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So Roxboro, North Carolina started the program, but they weren't feeding enough people. Mm-hmm. So they had the truck to come out of Durham. If it come to Roxboro or come to Oxford, it would justify feeding enough people. We went up there and they showed us the plan. And so when we went up there and looked at the plan and everything, Barbara and I, we were routed. We was always in there. School board meeting, city board meeting, county board meeting, the social service department. We always was just mischievous. We was always in the thing. And so Barbara said she would do the paperwork because she get paid.
Well, who was she? Who was Barbara Harris?
She was a school teacher. Yeah, but she wasn't a street girl.
Right.
And so what happened was we had to pay people, you know, had to keep the books and everything. And she did all the paperwork. So what happened, you had to feed a certain amount of people. So she was, by being professional, she had that fear, you know. But she had to deal with her street people.
Right.
And so she would stick her neck out. So Barbara, they told them you couldn't feed adults on their children. And so I had a problem with, my problem was, why wasn't Roxborough feeding enough kids? And why wasn't the program, they needed help.
So
what happened was that I said, Barbara, you know, I'm always from the street and I'm always thinking. You know, I'm always conniving. I said, Barbara, we hired, my mother hired people that worked in the cafeteria. Because it was easy, because all you do is go back and hire the people that worked in the cafeteria. Because they gave you, they gave us a lot of money.
What year are you talking about here?
I really can't pinpoint that year. Okay. But the money was, it was good pay, you know, about an hour. It was a fair pay. So Barbara said, I said, Barbara Harris, I tell you what I'm going to do. What we going to do is the food we left over, we're going to give it to the grown people. She said, no, you go to jail, you ain't supposed to do that. I said, let me tell you one thing, girl. Now, let's be smart. If there's not Roxbury there, have more people. We got to learn to feed these people. We got to find out how you do it. And I said, I got the plan. She said, but your plan breaks the law. I said, hell with the law. So what we did was we would give food to the older people, the guys in the street and the senior citizen people, older people. And we would tell them, don't tell nobody. Girl, do you know one thing? When we get down there for the kids, it'd be almost that many old people lined up hanging around. But you didn't want that because you're afraid somebody might come by from down in Raleigh, the head of the program, monitoring and see how you're feeding the people. Do you know what happened in 3 weeks?
What?
The truck, they looked at the amount of people we was feeding, and we asked them, could we get more food from Roxborough? And they thought, they said, no, you're not feeding that many people. We said, yes, we was. But all you got to do is, let's face it, and be honest, if we wanted to buy a piece of can or something new come out like can of bubble gum, we take my nieces or little kids, us adults, don't we? And we say, give it to the child first. If a child like it or eat it, then we'll test it. So all I did was use reverse psychology. If the old people eat it, they will tell the children, and they'll make sure they get enough children to you.
Mm-hmm.
You see what we did?
Mm-hmm.
And they knew we was going to set the food a certain place outside, and they would get theirs. And so Barbara found out it worked, and she got scared because she was feeding that many children. And so we had the people doing the Stovall. It's 10 miles away. And we taught those people how to do it, and it worked. And they closed Roxborough down. They brought the truck to Oxford. And see, I was in the janitorial business and show you what I was doing for these black people in Oxford. I didn't want no money. They was just giving me money. She just gave me some money for gas and stuff. I could have had a salary. My van would meet down here at the public housing. They would unload down at the largest. And then I would distribute the rest of the food out. And I would take my van and deliver the food to the other sites.
So what do you mean they closed Roxborough down?
Well, why drive from Durham to Roxborough and drop off a food for 50 people when you could drive to Oxford and drop off for 400 people, 300 children?
Oh, I see.
See? And they got mad because then, guess what happened? They called us up there and wanted to know, how did we feed more children? How did we get that many children to eat the food? And we told them how, because we didn't care no way. We, you know, and they said, you wasn't supposed to do it that way. We said, that's how you lost the program.
Mm-hmm. So you did what you had to do to feed the children.
That's the way you do it.
Right.
And that's the way I come up. You do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody, you know.
Was this during the time that you were serving on the board?
Yeah. But I've done a lot for these people in this town. But they don't, you know. They don't remember. They forgot. Mm-hmm. They short for you.
Well, that's why you got to write your book, right? A reminder.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you have to do. So, now, looking back on all these years, right now we're up to 1985. I haven't gone beyond that yet. And everything that you've done for the town, the civil rights movement, How do you feel about all that? I mean, do you regret anything that you've done?
I tell you, I don't regret it, but looking back at other people across the United States that went to jail, the Black Panther, all those people, I think about it sometimes. It's a shame that those people forgot. Just the Black people are crisis people. Mm. I tell everybody, that's the way I describe us, is crisis. We only rise to the occasion. And once it's over with, you forget it and throw it away. And you think you don't need it no more. You don't practice like the National Guard or something like that. You have to train all the time. You have to constantly train. And what happened? You kids don't train. You don't have nothing to train for. We have to train all the time. I started in 1960 training. I've been fighting ever since 1960. And it didn't get any easier. It got harder and harder as you went along. Mm-hmm. But see, you people don't train no more.
So what would you do differently if you had a chance?
I'd do like the professional blacks did. I'd sit back, let you go out there and get your head beat up by them white policemen, sick them dogs on you like you see on TV, and bite you all up, and they take them sticks and just beat you all up, and I'd be laying back waiting, and they kick out them restaurants on your knees and all that stuff. And then after y'all are done all that, they'll lock y'all up for it, for give you 3 or 4 years. I'd go down that line up and go in there and say, "Yes, sir, Mr. Cabin, it sure is nice to sit down in this nice air-conditioned place and eat. Your food is sure is good and sure is nice." And that's what I would like to do. I would do it that way.
You would?
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe. So, actually,
well, that's who benefited from it. I didn't have no money I didn't have no money to go in there and eat,
right,
and lay back after I'd been in there and right, been knocked around and all that. I didn't have no money. I couldn't eat in there. My parents couldn't eat in there.
But right now, you're running for office right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
What made you decide to do that?
I don't know. Just keep my name out here. I just in my blood. Always letting them know I'm around.
You just can't stay out of it.
Always have to let them know.
So you're not exactly sitting back anymore.
Well,
I
think I'm sitting back.
Yeah. What are your plans if you're elected this time?
I don't know. You might. I might bring you in to work with me in my campaign, and you come up with some ideas, different plans.
A
lot of changes. People going to sleep. You need to wake up the town. Blacks going to sleep. They don't got complacent. They go to shopping centers. They go to malls. They do this. And there's a lot more things still needed. We need loans. We need money that they got, that no down payment for homes like my daughter and others like you. They got money where you should be able to go buy you a $85,000 home if you make. Say you make $30,000, $35,000, $40,000 a year, you should be able to buy a home and with no down payment, and with a low interest rate, and have it progress after 15 years and do it like you do term insurance.
I'll vote for you. That's a great idea.
That's what I want to see, things like that. Well, it's still other things to fight for,
right,
that haven't been touched. But I would lay back, I got my house, I got 4 cars, I got it, man.
How about the educational system? You see things that need to go in there?
I worked in the education system I work with. I still think the education system should be like making cars, or like a similar, like making lipstick, or like a factory. The school system should be like a factory. You should see a finished product. When I came along, teachers seen a finished product. They seen you when you went to school. They seen you when you went to the grocery store. They seen you when you went to college. They seen you all the time. They was over you watching you. They wanted you to do good, be somebody, be something. So we was like to track you when you got married. I taught him, he was a good student. I taught his child, he's honest, he was this and that. Now they don't do that anymore. Teachers don't want to see no finished product. They want to know how much they're going to get for teaching, for salary. They don't care what happened to that student. He turned out to be the president of the United States. He turned out to be the president of this country, or this university, or this big company, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that school integration has been a good thing in Oxford?
School integration? if not only Oxford, everywhere was the worst thing that ever happened.
Really?
I argued every day, and this week I was arguing with a group of young guys.
And why do you think that?
You should. What did I tell you? If you're going to eat candy, if we're going to try some Kool-Aid, or we're going to try a different drink, you and I don't try it. We go get our nieces and our cousin kids and let them try those drinks and see how they like it. And then if they like it, then we do it. Integration should have started in neighborhoods like I start in neighborhoods, not schools. You force someone, somebody that was innocent, was vulnerable, and could not fight back.
I see. So you think the adults should have tried to integrate
right
before they tried
in neighborhoods like I live in, John. That's where it should have started first. And those guys agreed, and they got children. They came up and integrated fourth grade, they said. Some said they hit it in the fifth grade, but they were farming kids, so they could relate to both sides of it. And they thought I still had a good point that we should have. Because some of us live in integrated neighborhoods, and we think that we should have started, it should have been started in the neighborhood.
Right.
And I think so too.
I could see, that makes a lot of sense actually. So maybe both things could have been done instead of just the children. Or actually if you did one, the other would happen more naturally.
Right.
Because they had neighborhood school.
Right.
Yeah, that's an interesting
It's
one.
Just reverse psychology. Right. Now you're going back to it. You integrate the school, you integrate the neighborhood, now you got to go back and integrate the school system, put it back where it was.
Well, what about your granddaughter? How do you think her education is? She goes to public schools here.
Who, my granddaughter?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Have you been to her classroom?
Yeah, I talked to her teacher, been to her class. She's not old enough. She'd be in the second grade now coming up.
Right.
But I will talk to her teacher and let her know how smart she is. And I always think that, see, I came out the streets. All my nieces came out the street because my sister and them bring their children up in the street. They know names, they know hustles, they know people who work for me, they know street names, they know street children. Smart children still need to come up in the street.
Mm.
You learn street people. So you don't look down on them, you help them, you understand their life too. They got a life. Somebody love them just like they love anybody else. I don't, Tim McVeigh, I don't care how many people he bummed. He bummed 100 and some, he could bum 5,000. Somebody still love him and think he should have had a chance. Somebody love everybody.
That's true. That's true. So, would you say that from what you know of the school system now, that it's been integrated in Oxford, are most of the teachers here white now or black?
Well, what happened is, and I live in a small town, and you see it. It happened in big cities too, but you close, and you didn't come out. You'll never see what I see. Because they didn't tell you on the farm. When it first started with mules and plowing, distraction. See, you can see all each side. What they did was they put a brow over his eyes to make him focus straight down the field and couldn't see out the side of his eyes, see out the side of his head. So what happens now is you don't see nothing because you came up during the period. You never raised around nothing. Every big shot, every time a teacher come in here, a assistant principal, half of the people work at the superintendent office, where do they live in? What kind of neighborhood do they live in? When they come in town, what neighborhood are they going to look to go to live in?
The nicest neighborhood.
And where is that at?
Well, generally, it's a white neighborhood.
Why? Right. They move to the white neighborhood. Or do they go to that church in that town? What church are they going to pick? They going to pick the less church with them. What grocery store they gonna go shopping at? They gonna go cross town or to where the most, or drive to another town. You follow what I'm saying? All right then.
Will this be true? Are you speaking of black teachers as well?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Black teachers.
So they go to the white
churches. They segregate themselves.
Too?
Yeah.
So they come in town. They move into the nice white neighborhoods.
Get a Mercedes Benz.
And they go to white churches.
They'll go to white churches, or you got them right down in Chapel Hill.
I see what you're saying. So you're saying that even if there are black teachers, it's not like the black teachers you knew
as a
child.
Right. So they don't know your feelings, your ache, your pains, and your hurt because they don't go to them grocery store and see you can't put beans in a bag and see how much food you buy, see how you live it. They don't see them food stamps. They don't see that.
I just want to ask you a couple more questions before this tape ends. One is, I know you've run for mayor several times.
Yeah.
Can you tell me the years that you ran for mayor?
I ran one time when I was on the board. Mm-hmm. In 83 or 84, I ran one time mm-hmm. when I was on the board against okay. the mayor because I thought he should be challenged. Right. I don't think he should be the mayor and nobody challenged. In these little towns, you don't challenge white people for mayors and things like that. And white people and black people are satisfied because they said black shouldn't be mayor.
That's black what they, said that.
Yeah, they told me that was a white man's job. That wasn't a black man's job. And they come up and tell you that. And I told them, I think they are right. They are right. But I want to be a mayor, and I want to be a black man that's a mayor. And let's see, can he have that same job?
So how many times have you ran exactly?
I think I probably ran for mayor about 3 or 4 times.
3 or 4 times. Would you do it again?
Whichever way the wind is blowing. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Now here's a more general question. I'm curious, we've been talking a lot about race relations in general, and you've been very expressive about your experience here in Oxford. What do you think about the race commission, Clinton's race commission, with John Hope Franklin as the chairman?
You got to start somewhere. You got to try something.
So you think it's a good idea?
I think it's a good idea. But it goes back to what I told you from the beginning. You need 3 or 4 groups mm-hmm. with the idea. Mm-hmm. You need 3 or 4 groups with the idea. But you need one that don't like the idea. That need want to fix it their way. Mm-hmm. And then you need a radical group that want to fix it their way. But you need some more, but you got to start.
So you need these groups sort of working with and against each other, making things move.
Right.
So if John Hope Franklin walked up to you and tapped you and said, what is your advice for me? What should I do on this commission? What would you say to him?
I would tell him, if he would come up to me, is you need people out there trying and stop. Don't sit down and talk and draw on a piece of paper. You go out there and test race. That's what I would say today. Walk over to Chappie and say, look, we got a race problem here. I want to be the vice president of the school. I want test it and show that and take a shot and send warriors out. You got to have warriors to go out there like we used to and test the war. Mm-hmm. Identify where it is. It's not everywhere. You got to go where it is. Mm-hmm. You got to go where it's moved. And you got to start at the top. You go to government, you go to Washington, D.C., and start there. Look what they did with Mayor Barry. They took the city and everything from him mm-hmm. because he's so smart. Mm-hmm. Now the government runs everything. Mm-hmm. So I would tell him, you need to go to the sources. Go to these major companies that has these race problems. That's the same thing as UPS. That's why they got part-time workers. Part-time workers is nothing but a quota for blacks. If you go there and ask how many blacks you got working at UPS, oh, we got 250 blacks work for us. How many full-time? We got 4 full-time. We got 50 whites full-time. But we got 200 blacks part-time. And you as a young student in school, you would say, that's good if you got 200 blacks as part-time, but if you look at them, that's part-time. They don't have no job. They don't have no say-so. The man is doing them a favor. If you don't push it, you know, if you want them nice, but you think they're doing you a favor. Right. You ain't got no job.
No benefits.
You ain't got nothing.
Right. Well, I have to tell you, it's been a very enlightening interview. Do you have any parting words before we stop the tape?
I always think that if there's anything I can do for any young person advanced in life, if there's any advice or anything I can do, and if someone willing to and want to listen and want help, I will work with them and try to help them mm-hmm. and go as far as I can with them. But I'll tell you one thing. I have never seen a turtle crawl that didn't stick its neck out. If anything ain't worth dying for, don't fool with it. Mm. And anytime you listen, always listen to people talking about what you can do. If they ain't they're not leading, and they're not sticking their neck out, you better ease away from them and move on to somebody else. Mm. But in life, you're going to have your ups and downs. You're going to have the good, so you have to take the good with the bad. And I work out here with people, and I always do it. But for you, I hope you be successful in life, and I hope whatever I do for you and whatever I can help you, I hope it works. And a lot of I can learn from you. But you gotta, what you think and what you believe in, don't give up on it. Stay focused. And like I told you about the mule, that's why they put the brow on it. To keep its eyes, keep it from looking out the sides, to make you stay focused on what you're doing.
Well, that's good advice.
And